L'Officine Universelle Bully presents Ancient Beauty Rituals. Episode 5, A Samurai on His Wedding Day. Grand Samurai Takeda's Reverie Before His Bath in 1730, Okinawa, Japan. There is nothing you can see that is not a flower. There is nothing you can think that is not the moon. A melancholic smile fluttered across Takeda's face as he recalled the poem by Matsuo Basho, one of Japan's greatest poets. So, he was turning a romantic. Not that he did not want this, but it saddened him a touch that his glorious days of being called to war had slowly given way to the easy life of a feudal lord. As a samurai of great repute, Takeda had been granted a large landholding by the emperor himself and was now a daimyo, or a provincial lord, looking after the land and its people. He, however, still lived by the Bushido Code of Conduct, or the Way of the Warrior, practicing sword fighting, horseback archery, studying philosophy, nature, poetry, and living by the highest ideals of courage, self-discipline, and loyalty. Staring into the horizon of the grand Pacific Ocean this morning, enveloped by the fragrance of the bamboo grove behind him, Takeda closed his eyes and took a long, deep breath. "My life is finally blossoming with love," he thought out aloud, imagining his bride-to-be's face. A sudden movement at his feet startled Takeda. He looked down and became livid. A white serpent just skidded through his feet. The reptile immediately reminded him of his longtime rival, his evil nemesis, the powerful ninja Orochimaru. The white serpent was his infamous attribute. Orochimaru would wear it embroidered on his black katabira, armored jacket, and would leave a living snake near each and every of his numerous victims. Takeda and he went back a long way, and their enmity was samurai folklore. Their last encounter had left Orochimaru with an ardent desire for revenge that Takeda thought he had at last extinguished by retreating from his samurai life. In burning down his enemy's house, Takeda was unaware a maid was trapped inside, who was Orochimaru's lover. The evil serpent suddenly stood up and darkly whispered with a sneer. Was it Orochimaru in his serpent form speaking? "I hear you're getting married, Takeda. Does that mean you're laying low the sword? You and I are not done as yet. Choose succor, and my venom will course through her veins, sending her into the arms of death instead of you. Choose the sword, and you will have a chance to fight for her life." Speaking thus, the serpent vanished. Takeda felt lightheaded. He was unsure if this was a hallucination, or did he really have an encounter with the evil ninja? Seeing no traces on the sand, he concluded it was his mind playing tricks. Not today, he thought. Today was his wedding day, and he would not let bad memories spoil it. He wanted to look his best and make Saka the happiest she had ever felt. "It is time for the ritual bath, Takeda-sama." His thoughts were gently broken by the voice of his personal attendant. He smiled. It was time to lay down the sword and start thinking about his future with the beautiful and charming Saka. The bathing ritual holds supreme significance in Japanese culture. It is said that in the West, a bath is for cleansing the body. In Japan, it is for cleansing the soul. Historians attribute it to the abundance of onsen, or natural hot water springs, and widely available public bathing houses, or sento, that made it possible for everyone to access a bath. Before important ceremonies with religious or social significance, like a wedding, it was important to take a purification bath. The bath was taken with unheated water while reciting Buddhist sutras. This was followed by a visit to the temple or the deity. Nobility, courtiers, and the daimyo had private bathing quarters attached to their estates, with well-designed bathtubs, and an attendant would help his master by pouring water, scrubbing the back, and washing the hair. Cleansing clays and komenuka, or rice bran, served as soaps and body scrubs. For the face, a slightly coarse paste made of finely ground red azuki beans was used. The beans contain a naturally occurring foaming agent, known as saponin, that helps to cleanse and tighten pores. Sake and rice water were important moisturizing ingredients. Takeda knew he was lucky to be marrying the love of his life. It was rare that a wedding in elite society would be based on desires of the heart. Marriages were arrangements based on status and approved by the shogunate, lest it cause any political troubles. Thankfully, Saka, 21, and the youngest daughter of a shogun, was seen as an excellent match for Takeda. After all, he had both a legendary reputation as a samurai and the status of a daimyo. Takeda remembered the moment he set eyes on the charming Saka. Wounded from leading a battle for the shogun, he'd been rushed to his palace, where Saka was charged with overseeing his recovery. The palace was a lavishly designed building on the castle grounds, which were surrounded by a moat for protection from attacks. The outer rooms of the palace were reserved for greeting low-ranked officials and rivals, with paintings of tigers and dragons to intimidate, while the private quarters for family and friends had soothing, sublime visuals of ponds, gardens, and flowers. The nightingale floors in the corridors made a chirping sound when someone walked on them, assuring no intruder passed undetected. Lying on the tatami mat-covered wooden floor, he looked up at the delicately painted ceiling, resplendent with sceneries of gardens and water bodies. Aloeswood incense burnt in a corner of the room, mixing with the unmistakable fragrance of cherry blossoms in bloom in the gardens outside. Takeda was pleased that the shogun considered him close enough to be housed in the private family quarters. Saka's softness and gentle attention seemed to make the medicines work better, and his heart sing. "You have a magical touch, Saka," he whispered as she changed his bandage. Saka smiled shyly, her heart racing. The realization she was falling in love with this handsome, gallant warrior dawned upon her. It was in the 14th century, when warfare became intense and injuries more commonplace, that the practice of wound medicine started developing. Prior to this, practices derived from Chinese traditions were used by imperial court physicians. This slowly evolved into the traditional holistic Kampo medicine and therapeutic system in Japan that aimed at bringing a balance of energies in the body through medicines derived from plants, fruits, trees, as well as rocks and shells. Medicines were supplemented with therapies based on acupuncture, heat therapy, diet, and the ancient Anmar massage, the precursor to the Shiatsu massage. A widely used herb was aloe vera, both ingested as a juice and topically applied as a gel to soothe, heal, and regenerate skin tissue in case of an injury. Its anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, antiseptic, with skin and wound healing properties were well known. Another popular ingredient was indigo, a substance known to alleviate skin irritations, redness, inflammations, and to promote healing. It was used by the geishas to treat eczema and by the samurai warriors under their armor to promote wound healing. Horse oil, derived from horse fat, was yet another miracle product to remedy burns, insect bites, cuts, and even hair loss. Every morning, Takeda was woken up by an attendant who brought him some herbal medicinal tea to build his strength up. He then walked in the gardens outside, on beautiful tree-lined walking paths, breathing in the fresh air. Pines, maple, ginkgo, cherry blossoms. Myriad trees grew in abundance in the manicured gardens. Many times, his thoughts wandered to Saka and her captivating beauty. He looked forward to recovering, but the truth was that he could not bear to stay away from her. He loved to see her tending to him, her head bent in the light of the morning, black hair cascading down her back, framing her dainty features. Her porcelain skin glowed as if lit from within. He returned to see Saka waiting to change his dressings. He would not hold back any longer. Today he would let her know his intent. "I will speak with your father, Saka," he gently announced. "What about?" Saka pretended not to understand, well aware of where this was going. It would be forward of her to look very enthusiastic, though her heart was bursting with joy. "I would like you to take care of me forever, as my wife, with your father's due permission, and of course yours as well." He gently cupped her chin and lifted her delicate face. Saka found the courage to look into his eyes and said softly, "I would like that very much." With those words, she turned to leave the room, her heart bursting with joy. Takeda felt the ground slip from beneath his feet as he saw the motif of the white snake he knew all too well, embroidered at the back of her kimono. Still staring at the horizon on the beach, he shivered at this memory. Was the shape-shifting Orochimaru really a threat to Saka? Should he prepare for another combat? 18th century Japan was the golden era in terms of hair care, hairstyles, and skin care. Because they led less constrained lives than nobility, women of liberal social strata, like wealthy merchant class and geishas, inspired practices used by women of the aristocracy. Geishas were the fashion and self-care influences of the era, so to speak, and our bride, Saka, would have adopted some of their practices. During the Edo period, the practice of the face painted white with ochiroi, a blend of talc, kaolinite magnesium carbonate, cornstarch and zinc oxide, had given way to enhancing the natural skin tone that looked polished and translucent. One way was to repeatedly apply and remove the ochiroi by scrubbing the cheeks with a towel, making the skin resemble porcelain. Another moisturizing exfoliant was rough grains of sea salt mixed with some milk cream. Acne was cured by applying a paste of green tea powder. In fact, one of the earliest known face masks can be credited to the geishas, who soaked a piece of fine silk in petals steamed overnight and applied it. Hair care and hairstyles also evolved. From long hair falling down the back in medieval Japan to elaborate buns in the Edo period, held in place by intricately designed combs and hair jewellery. Each type of hairstyle was a visible indicator of a woman's status or role in society. A widow would carry a different coif from a young, unwed girl. These hairstyles were meant to last for several days, even up to a week, and were held in place by wax. A hair care ingredient much coveted for its reputation as the secret behind a geisha's silken smooth hair was camellia oil. It is still used in Japanese hair care products. Hair was also kept glossy with Sanakezura extract, a type of magnolia, and iodine derived from seaweeds. Washing and combing the hair was an all-day affair that required the attention of attendants who used intricately carved boxwood combs pre-soaked in camellia oil to keep the hair free of static. Another ancient recipe from Japan that has stood the test of time is the use of leftover water after soaking uncooked rice as a hair and body softening rinse while protecting them from the sun's harsh rays. A great deal of time was also spent daily on applying makeup and cosmetics that accentuated the natural beauty of the skin. Wearing makeup was considered good etiquette and form. Japanese women applied beni to their lips, a red colour pigment made from safflower, and paint inside the lip line to make their pucker look like a bright red flower bud. However, as anthropologist and novelist Liza Dalby writes in her book, Kimono, Fashioning Art, of more importance than the physical was a beautiful lady's accomplishing attributes, like, for instance, quote, the poems she wrote, the papers she used, and her calligraphic style, the blend of incense with which she chose to perfume her rooms and clothing, and the colour combinations in her layered robes. The match of his beautiful daughter with the brave and reputed Takeda made the shogun extremely happy. He couldn't wait to share the news with his wife, Aki. Aki was the Midai Dokoro, the shogun's official wife, and lived in the women's quarters that were connected to the rest of the palace through a single route called the Osuzuroka, or the Great Bell Corridor. The shogun was the only male allowed to enter the women's quarters through the corridor. The ringing of the Suzu bells announced his entrance. "It is time to prepare for Saka's wedding, Aki," his voice boomed. His excitement was palpable. Aki was preparing to retire for the night, and her personal attendant was removing her hair ornaments when the shogun rushed in. Her richly decorated boudoir reflected her status. Exquisite lacquer artifacts and painted screens added to the elegance. Waving her attendant away, she exclaimed, both overjoyed and suddenly nervous with excitement, "Our daughter Saka, going to be a bride. I must start putting together her trousseau, her wedding dresses, the invitations. There's so much to take care of." Meanwhile, Takeda had requested Saka to meet him in the garden. As the moon came up, bathing the betrothed and their surroundings in pristine beauty, Takeda handed her his gift, a beautifully woven basket with blossoms of the sakurasu flowers. The significance was not lost on Saka. "To desire and everlasting love, my dear," said Takeda. He then slipped an intricately designed emerald bracelet on Saka's wrist, marvelling at her soft, well-cared-for hands. When a daimyo, powerful feudal lord, married a daughter of the shogun, military ruler of the country appointed by the emperor, the ceremony was more formal. In order to welcome his bride, the daimyo had to build a new compartment attached to his residence. Serious expenses were involved, but the political alliance fortified the position of the daimyo by raising his rank. The wedding trousseau was elaborate and painstakingly put together. Apart from intricately crafted articles of domestic and personal use, there were decorative shelves, screens, and paintings depicting auspicious symbols and scenes. There were cosmetic boxes, mirrors and mirror stands, decorative basins, tooth blackening sets, comb and hair ornament boxes, incense boxes and pillows, leisure articles such as perm matching cards, a tea ceremony chest, tableware, kimonos, books, dolls, and so on. These articles expressed social status and the notion that marriage was the most important event in a woman's life. A special type of shell-matching boxes had an important function within the wedding set. These octagonal boxes were decorated using a distinctive Japanese lacquerware technique called maki-i that used sprinkles of gold or silver powder and were filled with shells, 360 pieces altogether, each decorated with a painted pattern on the inside, often alluding to classical literature. Only the two halves of one shell would match perfectly, a symbolization of the married couple. Most items carried the family crests of both sides. Jewelry such as earrings, necklaces, rings, and bracelets, common in many other cultures, were not traditionally worn by Japanese women or men. Wealth and status were mostly communicated through the quality and expense of the cloth one wore, as well as the tailoring of the clothing. Nonetheless, Japanese men and women did wear certain resplendent accessories that can be considered jewelry. For men, only samurai could carry double swords. Most men and women, even those who were members of lower ranks, were permitted to wear hanging things, including pipes, pipe covers, and tobacco pouches, as well as small cases suspended on cords with a sliding bead attached to a toggle. Tucked into a waist sash, these hanging things became lavish ornaments that expressed the wearer's wealth and taste. Women wore beautiful hairpins and combs to secure elaborate hairstyles. Wealthy women changed their hair ornaments to reflect the change in seasons. The ornaments were mostly made from ivory, tortoise shell, mother of pearl, lacquer, gold, silver, and a range of highly worked metal alloys that have distinct warm and cool colours, such as akagane, red pickled copper, shakudo, blue-black copper gold, and shibuichi, silver-grey silver copper. Still reminiscing by the ocean, Takeda couldn't shake off the feeling of foreboding. His sense of reality wavered once again. As an honourable samurai, it would be his duty to hunt down Orochimaru and ensure his beloved's safety. Deep in agitated thought, he paced up and down the beach, fighting to make sense of this untimely encounter with his archenemy. Instinctively, his hand tightened around the handle of his katana, and he felt the fear and doubt lifting. He would be ready when the time came to face the ninja. As he regained composure, Takeda recalled the tea ceremony hosted by Sakka's father to honour the new alliance. In the tea room, after the austere rite of tea, his father-in-law had remarked about the striking figure Takeda cut. His hair, dense and black, tied up in a topknot. His daisho, the pair of long and short swords a samurai was allowed to carry on his person, thrust in his obi, or waistband, and the erect posture with which Takeda carried himself. Ah, I must tell you where I get my katana crafted from. The craftsman is a magician with the steel blade, said Takeda, smiling at his father-in-law. He let the elderly shogun run his fingers over the handle of his wakizashi, or the shorter sword that he carried indoors. Sheathed in a lacquered scabbard, the wooden handle was a work of art in itself, with relief features of a dragon in fight. The men bonded over mutual respect and fondness for each other. Historically, Japanese men have had a tumultuous relationship with facial hair. While a beard and moustache were coveted in medieval Japan, symbolizing experience and a warrior's spirit, the practice declined in the Edo period. Samurais now kept a clean-shaven look to signify they would not rebel against the shogunate. The samurai topknot, or the shonmage, is the most enduring symbol of the warrior men. It was what one can call the original man bun. Samurai warriors took great care styling their hair, oiling and waxing it, before pulling it into the topknot. Status was also communicated with a samurai's clothing style. Outlandish, colourful patterns were considered immodest and conceited. Outside the home, the samurai wore a two-piece costume called a kamishimo over the kimono. The upper piece was a sleeveless jacket with exaggerated shoulders, complemented with wide flowing trousers called hakama. When travelling, a long-sleeved coat was worn over the kimono. The samurai's swords were normally thrust through an obi, a belt wrapped around the waist, and were always worn on the left side. When indoors, the samurai removed his long sword, but was always armed with some form of weaponry. A flock of seagulls taking flight snapped Takeda out of his reverie. The sun was starting to rise over the horizon. He reached into his robe for a piece of fragrant paper tied up with a string of twine and a small glass bottle. Opening the scroll, he read the haiku he had composed last night. Our love will make us the cheeriest warriors, the luckiest dreamers. He slipped the scroll into the bottle and threw it into the ocean. Takeda was ready for love. He walked back towards the house, ready to take his bath and to lay low the sword. Unbeknownst to him, a sinuous shape slithered in the sand, following him into the house.
This was an episode of Beauty Rituals Through the Centuries from Officine Universelle Bully. You will soon find a new story that will take you on a journey through time. Our podcasts are available on all listening platforms.